Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Barty in Washington. Today is Wednesday, March 15, and here are some of the stories we are covering. Malawi's president declares a state of disaster for areas hit by Cyclone Freddy.
We are supporting the Ministry of Health in one of the biggest hospitals in the country, Queen Elizabeth Central Hospital, to triage and to treat patients at the emergency department.
Nigeria's central bank orders financial institutions to recirculate old Naira currency notes in compliance with a Supreme Court ruling. Liberia's Elections Commission decries budgetary constraints ahead of the 2023 presidential election. The COVID-19 pandemic accelerates a healthcare brain drain for Africa. South Sudan prepares to resume talks in Rome with peace holdouts. U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken is in Ethiopia as part of a two-nation tour of Africa.
We are asking that Secretary Blinken really center all of his engagements with the government of Ethiopia around human rights. We also still need to see more commitment on justice and accountability.
And a Kenyan cafe employs people with cognitive disorders. Those stories and more are coming up on Daybreak Africa. Malawi has declared a state of disaster from Cyclone Freddy, which has killed at least 219 people in Malawi and Mozambique since Saturday night and displaced 11,000 people whose homes were washed away in southern districts are sheltering in schools but lack food, clothes, and blankets. Malawi's weather experts say the cyclone is slowly moving back to Mozambique, where 22,000 are displaced. Lamek Masina reports from Blantyre.
The disaster declaration is a part of an appeal for national and international assistance for the victims of the cyclone. So far, several organizations have started responding to the call. Marion Pesha is the head of mission for Doctors Without Borders in Malawi. She told VOA that her organization has assigned medical workers to assist in handling casualties from the cyclone.
We are supporting the Ministry of Health in one of the biggest hospitals in the country, Queen Elizabeth Central Hospital, to triage and to treat patients at the emergency department because they have mass casualties brought to the hospital.
Survivors of homes that were washed away in southern districts say they are in need of basic necessities. Daniel Chironda is one of the victims in hard-hit Chilobwe Township in Blantyre. He says the first one is food. We also need plastic sheets so that we protect our shelters against rains. Also, we lack some clean water, soap, and blankets. The Malawi government says it is making efforts to assist the victims. Sosten Gwengwe is the Minister of Finance. He told a press conference in Blantyre on Tuesday that the government is considering revisiting its 2023-2024 budget to help cyclone victims.
The last week we presented a budget, and I know that on Monday parliamentarians will be sitting again to start the debate. I will be pleading with parliamentarians to now start looking at our figures because we might need to redirect some of the priorities because the scale of devastation that we've seen here is untold.
Cyclone Freddy is one of the most powerful and longest-lasting storms ever recorded in the southern hemisphere. It caused destruction in Mozambique, where it made landfall over the weekend, making more than 20,000 homeless. In Malawi, meteorological experts say the cyclone is slowly moving back to Mozambique. Lucen Tiratira is the head of the meteorological department in Malawi.
However, as this cyclone is weakening, it's now giving way for the Congo air mass, which will continue giving rainfall. Unfortunately, that we are seeing a possibility of rainfall to continue over some areas also throughout the week.
In the meantime, rescue and search operations are underway in the cyclone hit areas despite continuing rains. Lamek Masina for VOA News, Blantyre, Malawi.
U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken is in Ethiopia on a two-nation Africa tour that will also take him to Niger. Kate Hickson is the Africa Advocacy Director at Amnesty International USA. She tells viewer Salim Solomon that Amnesty is urging the U.S. administration, more specifically Blinken, to prioritize this trip.
We are asking that Secretary Blinken really center all of his engagements with the government of Ethiopia around human rights. While we have seen an improvement in the situation in Northern Tigray since the signing of the cessation of hostilities, there still needs to be improved access throughout the country for humanitarian actors and human rights monitors. We also still need to see more commitment on justice and accountability, and would really like for Secretary Blinken to push that. And then finally, as you may have seen, the government is actively mobilizing support to terminate the mandate of the International Commission of Human Rights Experts on Ethiopia. And we are asking that Blinken make clear that the commission has the U.S. support and that they expect the government of Ethiopia to continue to engage with this commission and give unfettered access in the country.
You mentioned that this is a critical time and that human rights advocates are pushing for the implementation of the cessation of hostilities and also more specifically the International Commission of Human Rights Experts. Why is that important for peace process, and why is it important for U.S. officials to push for that?
So all parties to the war have committed unspeakable abuses, including mass extrajudicial killings, sexual violence against women and girls. And there has been an accountability deficit that has really permeated the conflict. And the commission is one way to make sure that there is documentation of some of these abuses and a potential for accountability down the road. You've seen also some engagement of the government of Ethiopia on this domestically, but we really need to make sure that is a full international community effort to give a chance for justice and accountability from the conflict.
Is there anything that you'd like to include that Amnesty would want to see as a result of this trip, either, you know, the U.S. normalizing relations with Ethiopia, especially after the war and a lot of atrocities committed in the country? What are you urging as an organization?
Given the failure of the government of Ethiopia to cooperate with the commission thus far, we would really like to see, as a result of this trip, a clear commitment for that cooperation and unfettered access of the commission to all the different regions. Also, something that Secretary Blinken has previously promised to Congress is a determination, an atrocity determination, and we haven't seen that come out either, and that's also important for the accountability process. So those are two things that I think we'd like to see as a result of this trip.
That was Kate Hickson, Africa Advocacy Director at Amnesty International USA. She spoke with viewer Salim Solomon. Nigeria's central bank has ordered the recirculation of old Naira currency notes to comply with a March 3rd ruling by the Supreme Court. The bank's statement late Monday came after complaints that it was not following the court's ruling. Millions of Nigerians and businesses that have been struggling with a cash shortage have welcomed the order. Timothy Obiezu reports from Abuja.
Abuja trader Grace Alta resumed her business early Tuesday morning, hours after the CBN announcement to commercial banks. Alta sells food items and vegetables and says the cash scarcity caused by the CBN policy affected her business negatively. Like many small businesses here, she's happy with the new development. The central bank's directive to money banks came 10 days after the Supreme Court's ruling. Nigerian authorities last October introduced newly designed 200, 500 and 1,000 Naira bills and began a quick withdrawal of the old bills. The central bank said it was a measure to assert control over cash in circulation, fight crime, combat counterfeiting and promote cashless payments. Authorities had initially ignored an order by the court to stop implementing the cash policy, saying it lacked jurisdiction on the topic. But the withdrawal of the old bills led to a severe cash squeeze, causing heightened tensions just ahead of the presidential election last month. Three people died during protests against the policy across Nigeria. Abuja resident Joseph Anthony does not welcome the return of the old bills. 40% of Nigerians do not use banks, and few banks operate in rural areas, making the rollout of the new currency hard to implement. Experts say the currency redesign, in theory, could have achieved more success if properly implemented. Eze Onyebere is an economist at the Center for Social Justice. Onyebere said the central bank was more motivated by politics than the will of the people. Bank chief Godwin Emefiele made an unsuccessful run for president this year. Nigeria's economy is struggling with huge debts and record inflation. For now, many like Alta hope the return of the old currency will make things better, or at least return them to what they used to be. Timothy Obiezu for VOA News, Abuja, Nigeria.
You are listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Barton, Washington. Today's Wednesday, March 15. For more Africa news and features, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Connect with us on all social media platforms. We are on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. The National Elections Commission of Liberia, also known as NEC, says it will cut down on some activities ahead of the country's general elections due to low funding from the government. Voters are expected to go to the polls on October 10. However, the commission says budgetary constraints might impact the elections. NEC says the finance ministry has cut the commission's proposed budget from $91 million to $51 million. Rita Jilobwe Duo has the details from Monrovia.
The head of the commission, David Etobran Lasana, says the NEC will reduce expenditures by 75%. To meet the government's budgetary demands. She used civic and voter education, or CVE, as an example.
If we are supposed to spend $200 for CVE and we don't get that money, then we spend $50 for CVE, meaning that some of them will probably not take place. But we need the money for those activities to take place, including payment to temporary staff.
Aside from budget cuts, the NEC boss says the government has not yet made available the full amount is said it will designate for the elections.
For the voter registration, there was a budget of 20 million. So far, we have received 18 million for the elections. 33 million was allotted by the Ministry of Finance and Development Planning. Up to now, we have received 4 million against the 33 million.
Opposition political parties have been taken aback by the government's failure to fully fund the electoral body. The standard bearer of the Alternative National Congress and head of the opposition collaborating political parties, Alexander Cummings, says the government's action is deliberate and intended to destabilize the country's peace.
The weir-led government decision not to adequately and in a timely fashion fund the National Elections Commission is just another example of them violating the Liberian Constitution, something they swore to uphold. They are putting our country's democracy at risk. We will be very vocal in demanding that the NEC is fully funded. We will galvanize other opposition parties and figures to this cause because we do not want to see Liberia go backwards.
For his part, the national chairperson for former ruling party, but now opposition Unity Party Luther Tappe, says the government's action is a recipe for chaos.
The government's inability to exert itself to comply to the financial demands of the National Election Commission only undermines the reliability of our upcoming general election. And it's a true sense of a civil arise, especially when the people get to know that their constitutional rights are being tampered with in the name of insufficient funding for the electoral body. This is deeply concerning. George Weah and his government must find the money for the election body.
The issue has also drawn the attention of civil society and other stakeholders. One such person is Eddie Jaulu, the executive director of NEMO Partners for Democratic Development, a leading civil society institution advancing democracy, political accountability, and inclusive governance. He decries the continued lack of support to the NEC for the conduct of a free and fair vote.
In the absence of financial support, the National Election Commission cannot properly conduct a credible election. We will undermine the peace and stability of the nation. We call on the President of Liberia to do everything possible to support the National Election Commission.
Liberia's Information Minister Ledger Horeni says the NEC and the government's agreement is on course.
As far as we know, the Ministry of Finance and Development Planning, along with the National Elections Commission, have agreed on the timelines to release funding for the holding of the elections in October, and that's on course.
Though the National Elections Commission is an autonomous agency, the government is obligated by the Constitution to provide funding for its operations. Rita Jirabwe Duo for VOA, Morovia.
The South Sudan government and a coalition called the Non-Signatory Opposition Group say they are ready to resume peace talks next week in Rome, months after the government pulled out of the talks. Deng Gai Deng has the details for VOA from Boa.
Pagan Amom, leader of the opposition group Real SPLM, confirms that he received an invitation from the Sant Egidio community in Rome for the resumption of peace talks with the government to begin on March 20th. Amom says the talks will be a political discussion on the way forward after the Araxes transition was, in his words, illegally extended by the government in Juba.
Purpose of this meeting is to consult what to do after the failure of the implementation of the peace agreement that led to the extension. It is very important to note that the extension of the transition, like many other extensions in the past, have not helped.
Amom says his group is committed to addressing the root causes of the conflict and resolving the ongoing national crisis to achieve lasting peace.
It is the government that has suspended its participation in the talks, and we ask them now that they are returning to the talks whether they are serious and committed to address the root causes of the crisis and to work with us and all the other South Sudanese stakeholders to bring permanent peace in the country and a transition to a sustainable democracy.
Lili Adiu, press secretary in the office of President Salva Kiir, says government delegation headed by Presidential Affairs Minister Barnaba Marial will travel to Rome next week.
Starting from the 20th to the 25th of March, and the government delegation will go around the 18th.
The government pulled out of the talks last November, saying the holdout groups were only using the initiative to buy time in order to prepare for war. Last month, after Pope Francis' visit to Juba, Marial said the government could resume the talks with the opposition groups. Suba Samuel, a spokesperson of the National Salvation Front, says despite obstacles facing the talks, his group is ready to head back to Rome.
National Salvation Front has received some communication from Saint Egidio, from Rome, on resumption of peace talks.
The talks began in 2019 but have failed to stop violence in some parts of the country despite a ceasefire signed in January 2020. The transitional government suspended its parts in peace talks twice. Once in 2021, when it accused the NAST of killing four people, including two Catholic nuns, along the Juba-Nimli Highway, which the opposition group denied, and the second time last November. Suba says his group does not expect much from this round of talks unless the government shows commitment to resolve the root causes of the conflict.
The current government in Juba don't have the necessary capacity, don't have a political will, don't have a momentum, don't have an interest to discuss about genuine peace.
They include the NAST, led by General Thomas Cirilo Suwaka, and the South Sudan United Front, led by General Paul Malonga Wan, and the Real SPLM, led by General Pagan Amom. For VOA News, I am Deng Gaideng in Bor.
The World Health Organization says the widespread disruption of health services during the COVID-19 pandemic has led rich countries to increase their recruitment of health professionals from poor countries. As a result, some African nations are losing skilled workers. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from Geneva.
The world was suffering from a shortage of healthcare workers before the pandemic struck. 3 years of COVID-19 has worsened an already bad situation. The World Health Organization reports more than 115,000 healthcare workers died from the coronavirus, one in three suffer from anxiety and depression, and about 40% have left the profession because of burnout. This has set up a global competition among countries to recruit nurses and doctors to fill their dwindling ranks. WHO warns the accelerated recruitment of health professionals from poor countries could hurt health systems in their home countries. Jim Campbell is WHO Director of the Health Workforce Department. Of the 55 countries identified as most vulnerable to recruitment, he says 37 are in the WHO African region.
For these 37 countries, the impact of that is potentially going to have a negative impact on the population access to a qualified professional health worker, and therefore that there should be no active recruitment from those countries.
He says it is easy for anyone who has a professional license within the African continent to migrate and seek work anywhere inside or outside the region. He says poor working conditions and low pay contribute to the growing brain drain of health workers from the continent.
The Gulf states have traditionally been reliant on international personnel. And then some of the OECD high-income countries have really accelerated their recruitment and employment to respond to the pandemic and respond to the loss of lives, the infections, the absences of workers during the pandemic.
Campbell says WHO does not work to prevent migration among healthcare workers. He notes migration has benefits when it is managed appropriately and when the benefits are accrued by the individuals and systems of both the source and destination countries. WHO has drawn up a list of safeguards to ensure the international movement of health workers is ethically managed, and measures are taken to ensure an adequate supply of health workers remain in the sending countries. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
Diana Ayu struggled to find a safe space in the Kenyan capital for her daughter, who has neurological disorders, so she opened her own. Ayira's Neuro Soul Cafe not only welcomes people with cognitive conditions such as autism, but it also employs them and educates the public on neurodiversity. Victoria Amuga reports from Nairobi.
18-year-old Natasha Mwangi's efforts to find a job were futile until a month ago when she got a job here. Natasha, who was born with cerebral palsy, welcomes guests at this cafe that offers jobs to people with neurological disorders.
I'm happy and at the same time excited. Thank you.
Ayira's Neuroso Cafe is the first of its kind in Kenya. The owner, Diana Ayo, says the name is derived from her now 5-year-old daughter, Ayira, born neurodivergent.
More and more I get parents approaching me and ask me, can my child come and work for you even if it's for free? I will even pay you. And I told them that is not the essence. My essence is to empower them so that the society, not only Diana can absorb them, but other people can.
Guests at the cafe are also educated on neurodiversity and how to interact with neurodiverse adults and children, including through art. Judy Njoki is one such guest.
You're just seeing this person for who they are beyond any extremities that they have or anything that they might, about them that might be different.
Common neurological disorders include autism, dyslexia, attention deficit hyperactive disorder, ADHD, and cerebral palsy, among others. These conditions are triggered by genetic predisposition and events during pregnancy. According to the U.S.-based Center for Neurodiversity and Employment Innovation, unemployment for people with such neurological disorders runs as high as 40%. Experts say that in Kenya, lack of understanding and proper education is locking out many highly talented individuals out of the job market. Margaret Njihia is a clinical psychologist in Kenya.
Having transitioned maybe the education system where their unique and very unique needs were not taken into consideration, then there's a very high likelihood that they will end up also not having their potentials and capacities fully identified and picked. And then this goes now to limit what we are talking about, the working space.
Neurodiversity is an understudied and underreported field, especially in Africa, according to the Neurodiversity Center. Diana hopes efforts such as this will help to educate and sensitize the public. Victoria Amunga for VOA News, Nairobi.
And that's it for this Wednesday, March 15th edition of Daybreak Africa. We thank you for coming aboard with us this morning. For more Africa news and features, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Connect with us on all social media platforms. We are on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, I am James Barton in Washington, wishing that you will have